Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, Rivka, back to the relationship series.
Yep.
If you, once again, what comes to mind?
So now that we're talking about this every week, it's something that is on my mind more during the week. Which is actually a cool principle that if you have to, for example, write something down that you're grateful for in the evening or tell somebody at the end of the week something you learned, you're going to look out for it more. Yes, Hanani.
By the way, just to add on that point, it's the what you find relevant as you go through the world. When you have people like learning the daf and they see the daf like emerge everywhere in life.
Exactly.
It's like they're gearing their mind towards a more, let's say, spiritual pursuit, which is the learning the daf for us, which is Talmud Torah. But then because your mind is focused on it, all the relevant connections sort of bleep up at you.
Or how they say in the Tel Aviv scene, you manifest it.
Very good. All right, so what aspect of relationships did you want to share with the crowd?
So this is actually, it was sparked by a comment that somebody made that I felt was devastatingly sad.
Wow.
And I was thinking, not that I told this to this person, but I was thinking, where did it come from? And I have a theory where it could come from. I would love to hear what you have to say about that.
Go for it.
This person was just commenting how they don't feel connected to their child. They have a young child, not a baby, but a young child. And they just wish they felt more connected to it. It doesn't, like, loves his kid, but doesn't miss the child, doesn't feel particularly happy to see the child at the end of the day. Just very nonchalant, I'm not so connected to my kid. And I found that very, very sad, because whether or not you had a good day with your kid, I would think it would be obvious that parents want to have a very deep, intimate connection with their child. Obviously, healthy, intimate connection with your child, but something that brings a smile to your face when you think of your kid. Not like always a chore or whatever it is. And I was trying to think to myself, what would I tell this person if I could? And I know this person for quite a while. I know this person since he had the baby. So I saw him when this baby was an infant. And the way he dealt with the baby was very mechanistic. It was, okay, you have to sleep now. You have to wake up now. Come, let me change you. Let me pick you up. Whatever it was. But it was quite mechanistic. And I tried to think to myself, what is missing in a connection with an infant?
What's missing in a mechanistic relationship with an infant?
With an infant. Because technically speaking, an infant really only has, 7 needs? Eating, sleeping, being warm, being changed.
So he was having a mechanistic, but in theory, you could claim that by definition of these 6 needs, everyone's having a mechanistic relationship with a baby.
Exactly. Or you could even say a mechanistic relationship with anybody. Okay, so a teenager has 30 needs. It's also, you could say it's mechanistic.
So why did you, what was it about?
So what I was saying is the following. If we hold the principle to be true, that vulnerability breeds relationship. Of course, also giving breeds relationship, but let's go with vulnerability. If you have layers in your being, right? This is called the onion example. You know, Shrek says ogres have layers, onions have layers. What he means is that you show different people different layers of your being. You show the bus driver 1 layer. You show your best friend a very deeper layer. It hurts a lot more if your best friend betrays that layer. It hurts a lot less if the bus driver doesn't like the layer he sees, right?
Of course.
The vulnerability is the deeper you let somebody see your layer. That's more vulnerable. If you share a secret to your friend, you're exposing a vulnerable layer. Why is it vulnerable? Because if this person would betray that layer, it would hurt more. Thereby, if they don't betray that layer, if they take it and they cherish it, that breeds closeness. So far, do you agree with what I'm saying?
So you're saying that the idea of vulnerability breeds closeness, because when I open myself up to allow, in the metaphorical sense, another person in, thereby I'm connected to them. I'm in relationship with them, because in a way they're part of me. And they've seen a deeper part of me.
And you have the risk of them.
And because of the risk, and because of the depth of their knowledge of me, thereby the way they react to it is, if it's with trust, if it's with sincerity, whatever it may be,
exactly.
I feel trusting to allow them to stay there.
Yes, exactly. Now, how does this deal with a baby? Obviously, you're not sharing your secrets to a baby. This is our baby cooing in the background. But obviously, you're not sharing your secrets to your baby.
So how'd you be vulnerable to a baby?
That's the thing. And this is something that I think is a lost art with babies, with anybody. But people do not know how to be anymore. What I mean by that is that everybody has their checklist of what they need to do in the day, me included. But it's very hard to stop and just be. If you're ever able to laugh with a friend, and just you both are looking at each other and you're just laughing, you're not trying to be anywhere or go anywhere. That is just being with each other. And that you can only do when you feel very, very safe, right?
Okay.
You're not trying to achieve anything in the relationship. You're just in love. Okay? A baby, an infant, when this baby looks at you as if he's memorizing your face, and you smile and he smiles back, if you're thinking, okay, but I also have to change his diaper and I also have to feed it, you're not going to enjoy the moment. It's not a vulnerable moment. It's a mechanistic moment. But this baby is the least judgmental being on the planet. All he is doing is looking at you like you are a mini god, and you can just be there in relationship with the baby. And I actually think it's a scary thing for people to do, because it's extremely vulnerable in a certain sense. When you have a baby stare at you, it's like you're stripped bare, because nothing that you've achieved matters to this baby. It's just you.
So if I repeat what you're saying, in a way you're saying that when it comes to a baby, because the baby is the least judgmental, it invites you to be the most vulnerable, not in terms of telling the baby something, but just experiencing the present with the baby. For example, if you get two random people, or even if you're on a date or something, you're shidduching. And you know this idea, they say, can you experience a silence together? The answer that people say, well, they use it as a litmus test to see if that the relationship's good, often that's a little bit silly. No, you shouldn't be comfortable with silence with a person unless you really know them, unless you really trust them. Otherwise, it is awkward. And there's a reason for that, because it genuinely is awkward.
But can you share a joke?
Fair.
Can you enjoy a sunset together?
Fair.
That's a little bit more comfortable than just silence. Or like, can you have eye contact 45 seconds? I actually had eye contact with someone for 45 minutes at one point in my life. But that's a story for a different time. But in any case, can you like stare into each other's eyes? Like, that's very powerful. Not necessarily necessary, but it's similar, trying to do similar things.
Right. So when it comes to another human being, unless you're in a deep, vulnerable, healthy relationship with them, it's not a healthy thing to do.
It's not necessarily healthy.
When it comes to a baby, you can just be, because, as far as I'm understanding, the nature of a baby is to be so unjudgmental and so just present with you, it allows you just to experience the baby in the here and now. But if you have as part of your checklist constantly what to do with the baby, you'll never allow yourself to immerse yourself in that state of being with a baby. Thereby, the baby will never become part of you, will never be with you. And thereby, when the baby gets older, there was a fundamental development stage that was just lost.
And not because you weren't a good parent. On a checklist level, on a mechanistic level, you were the best parent. But because at the point when this kid is 3 years old, you didn't take with you what the infant had to teach you, what the toddler had to teach you. Besides her becoming a unbelievably giving, patient, sleep-deprived person and be able to manage with that, you didn't take with you the joy of being without having to go anywhere.
With the child.
With the child, yes.
And that builds relationship.
Exactly. So to recap, starting with the point that vulnerability beats relationship, and being is vulnerable, ergo, a baby that invites you just to be with him is a scary... Sorry. Is a scary, vulnerable thing, but enter into that and you come out so much richer because you're able to enjoy the present moment.
And when your child gets older, you've got this deep relationship with him that you can't necessarily put your finger on.
I was just going to say, you won't be able to describe it. And now, if you want to put this together with something spiritual, well, I think this is actually fairly spiritual on its own. But if you want to connect this to God, prayer is one thing. And we need prayer. And prayer teaches us a lot about life and about being one of a community, etc. But there's something deeper there, isn't there?
So it's interesting. There's always a question. I think perhaps we can end on this. When it comes to like your relationship with the Almighty, people are like, okay, what can I actually do? Like, prayer is great, but that doesn't necessarily develop an intimacy that people are often looking for, because like developing a relationship with God that you can't see is quite tricky. One of my teachers, Rabbi David Gottlieb, said a very profound idea that I've often repeated. Do something in your life. Do something good. Do something that's worthy. Do something that you're proud of. But don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody, and have it almost like between you and the Almighty.
Like a conspiracy.
And that is a way of allowing God in, because you're doing something that you could tell other people about, but you're not, because of your recognition of this greater existence that's aware of it as well. And that's enough.
Very good. Yeah. Perfect. I would add another example. Is that my students have sometimes told me, I'm so angry at God. And how can I go around angry in God? That means I don't have faith. And that means I don't believe in God, but I do believe in God, but I'm so angry at God. And what am I going to do with all this pain? And those are real deep and painful questions. But the first thing I will often tell them is go out into the forest and just be angry at God. Because they're having so many questions about their anger at God. And how can I go through life with all these questions and anger and anger and anger? Is that they don't actually let themselves just be angry. And oftentimes they go out into the forest and they cry and they scream. But it's a relationship. It's at that point one of anger. But you know how it is when a couple is angry at each other and they actually, hopefully healthily, have it out. It breeds closeness. So if you just are in a relationship, that is, again, vulnerable, but also it is close.
Great.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.